live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Well, hi, everyone. I'm Neil Haley, the Total Tutor, and I'm excited again for another segment, Real Talk with the Real Housewife. So I want to welcome the program, Mary Ammons. Mary, how are you?
I'm doing great, Neil. Thank you. This has been so much fun working with you, and I'm very excited about the lineup I'm coming up with all kinds of interesting people and celebrities. And I mean, I believe everybody's a celebrity in their own right, but I have a lot of people that I'm reaching out to get on the show that I think our listeners will be very interested to hear about what they do. So,
well, absolutely. So I'm excited. Who's our guest today?
We have an amazing woman that I had the pleasure of connecting with in New York on a recent trip. Her name is Allison Singer, and she is the president and founder of Autism Science Foundation, and their mission is to support autism research by providing funding and other assistance to scientists and organizations that are doing autism research. And I had such an interesting day getting to know Allison and all about what she's about and her background. So I thought it would be a great opportunity to learn more. As I learned so much in our conversation, Allison, that day about the mistruths that are out there, and a lot of misinformation that the public has about autism. And really, that is your passion and your driving force, from what I gathered in our conversation, to really get the truth out and to do the research to get, you know, to get to the bottom of what's causing autism, and so forth. So what I'd love to do is, because I was so fascinated about your background, is will you tell us a little bit about how you got to this point in starting Autism Science Foundation?
Well, I have to say that I wish I had enlisted in the Autism Army, but actually I was drafted to come to the Autism Science Foundation because my own daughter was diagnosed with autism. She's now 16 years old, but she was diagnosed when she was 2.5, and she is tremendously challenged by autism. I think a lot of the autism that we've been seeing in the media really focuses on children who are very high-functioning, who have serious deficits in their social skills, but who are, with some support, are able to really function in a mainstream environment. But there's also a lot of kids with autism who have intellectual disability and self-injurious behaviors and who really struggle to get through the day. And unfortunately, that's the category that my daughter falls into. We work hard every day to help her. And there are many kids like her, and that's why we founded the Autism Science Foundation, because we want to find out what is causing autism and what are the best ways to treat autism so that all of our family members with autism can have the happiest, most productive lives possible.
Well, now, right? Allison,
so you got your start in television, which I thought was really interesting. Tell us what you did in television before you got into the Autism Foundation.
Well, all my life, when I was a child, I wanted to be a journalist. I knew I wanted to be in television news, and so I got myself into television news. I left New York. I worked at Norfolk, Virginia in television news and came back and worked at CNBC and MSNBC and NBC News. And that is where I met Bob Wright, who's the CEO of NBC. He knew that my daughter had autism, and when his grandson was diagnosed with autism, he decided to found an organization called Autism Speaks, and I was the first acting CEO of Autism Speaks. I was there for several years before I decided that what I really wanted to focus on was research and raising money to fund research to really understand, as I said, what is causing all of these kids to be diagnosed with autism and what can we do at a real molecular level that's targeting the core symptoms of autism so that they can gain back as much function as possible. So Bob Wright, as you probably know, founded Autism Speaks. They do a lot of different things in the autism community. But what the Autism Science Foundation does is really focus on funding smart, young investigators, undergraduates, graduate students, postdoctoral students, and early professors, assistant professors, to give them the seed money that they need to collect data. And then our hope is that they take that data that they collect with our funds and use it to get larger grants from the National Institutes of Health or the Centers for Disease Control. And we are starting to see that. Several of our funded grantees have parlayed their Autism Science Foundation fellowships and grants into much larger grants from the federal government and other sources. So this is working. We know that it's a very challenging problem. It's not, these are not questions that are going to be answered tomorrow. And we need to make sure that we are encouraging the youngest, brightest researchers to go into this field. And so that's where we really focus with our funding.
Well, very interesting, Allison. I wanted to get into more, again, living with autism every day gives you that passion that you want to find out why did this happen. But I understand from talking to Mary about your meeting that you have different ideas of what causes autism than many people in the country, which is kind of a bit interesting for my audience, especially the education audience that will probably pick this up as well and will want to listen to this this podcast. The question I want to ask you is, what is your belief on how people get autism? Because there's a lot of misconceptions out there.
Well, what are the truths, actually? That's the main word, is there are
the real
there are facts, yes.
Well, we need more research to understand the many causes of autism. We know at this point that there are probably multiple causes. What we know is that there's a strong genetic component to autism, and we know this because of twin studies. So in identical twins who share all of their DNA, if one twin is diagnosed with autism, then the chances of the other twin being diagnosed with autism is about 90%.
Wow.
Right? Which, and if they are non-identical twins, fraternal twins, the chances of both being diagnosed would be the same as the rate for siblings, which is about 1 in 15. So we know that there's a strong genetic component. But also 90% concordance in identical twins is not 100%. So we know it's not 100% genetic. We know that there must be something going on in the environment, most likely the prenatal environment, that is playing a role. And we've looked at some environmental factors that we've been able to rule out, like vaccines. There have been multiple studies looking at whether or not vaccines cause autism, and there are no studies that show that vaccines in any way cause autism. But we need more research, really, to understand what the causes are. We know it's not a single gene that's responsible for autism. We've actually identified dozens of genes at this point that are associated with autism, and they're not all inherited genes. Some of them are spontaneous mutations. And the question is, what is causing these spontaneous mutations? We know that these spontaneous mutations occur more frequently in older parents, particularly older fathers. But the bottom line here is that the genetic discoveries that we're making are really, even though they're different genes, they're all pointing toward a similar developmental pathway. And that's really the formation and the function of neural synapses in the brain. So for those of you who don't remember your intro biology from college, synapses are the spaces between nerve cells. It's the way that brain cells communicate with each other. So we know that there is some issue with the way that children with autism and adults with autism, the way that their brain cells are communicating with each other. But this is, you know, these are very hopeful findings in terms of being able to develop effective treatment. Once we start to identify genes, we can identify the proteins associated with those genes, and we can intervene medically with different medicinal compounds to try to re-regulate those imbalances and help children restore function. So this is an extremely hopeful time in terms of autism research. We're making good progress. I think every parent, myself included, will say that the progress is not coming fast enough, that we need to have more funding for autism research, because we are now at the point where there is more good research waiting to be funded than there is money to fund it. So research funding is critical.
Well, absolutely.
Right, and that really is your passion behind why you started Autism Science Foundation. Was
exactly.
I think you said you found that not enough dollars, not enough focus was going towards the research, which is really the answer to figuring out what is behind it, what causes it, and what we can do about it and learn more about it. So
I think, you know, over the last several years, there's certainly been better awareness of autism, but that awareness hasn't necessarily translated into dollars. As I said, we need more research money. We need to recognize that autism is an urgent national healthcare crisis. And yeah. Even in times of fiscal difficulties, we need Congress to say that this is a priority. We owe it to our children to invest in figuring out what's causing autism. You know, autism still receives a lot less federal research funding than many less prevalent childhood diseases. And I think we as a nation need to make a commitment to our children that we're going to find the answers by investing in science.
Well, absolutely, Allison.
Well, that makes a whole lot of... Sorry, go ahead, Neil.
No, that's okay, Mary. No, absolutely, Allison. I think that what happens is if we don't have that money and research, we won't be able to figure out ways. Therapy has been our greatest resource since we've been trying to combat certain autism to help children. But we've never been able to figure out ways of curing it in certain ways or finding out what the underlying causes. So research is, it's so great. Education is a great thing. Therapy is a great thing. But the research will be able to figure out this is why it's been caused, why people have it, why it's increased so much. Because Allison, isn't that true? It's increased by a dramatic amount of kids are diagnosed with autism compared to 20 years ago, for sure, right?
Yes, there's been a dramatic increase in the prevalence of autism. There's some question as to whether there's some debate as to whether it's been a true increase in the number of children who have autism or whether we're doing a better job at identifying children who are less impaired, who still could benefit from services, who still are struggling with the social deficits associated with autism. So we know that 20 years ago, 1 in 10,000 children were diagnosed with autism, and then about 5 years ago it was 1 in 166, then 1 in 150, and now in 2013, it's 1 in 88 children being diagnosed with an autism spectrum disorder.
That's
wow.
That's just something that, Mary, we have to figure out ways, and it's through fundraising. And Mary, we all know that's a challenge, and that Allison's doing all she can do, but our listeners have to help as well, right, Mary?
It certainly is. And I just had a thought when you were talking about the funding that our government, or the lack of funding that our government is targeting towards autism and autistic research. To me, that doesn't make a bit of sense, because if you think about the amount of cost it takes to mainstream and take care of an autistic kid in a public school environment, you'd think that they would be thinking, proactively thinking about the future and how we really do need to figure out what's causing it and get to the bottom of it and so that, you know, it can all kind of balance out as far as the needed support and all of that. And I just commend you, Allison, for what you're doing, because you're an incredible communicator. I think your passion just resonates from all aspects of what you're doing. And I'm thrilled to have you on our show to share all of this stuff, because it's so important. And I just applaud you for what you're doing, not only for what you're doing as far as, creating a better world for everyone and bringing awareness to this issue, but also for the tireless sacrifices you're making personally in raising your daughter. I know that's challenging, and as a full-time working mom and a full-time,
nonstop, and I can't imagine how much passion you have towards this, because, I mean, it resonates through you.
Well, I appreciate your saying that. I think I'm going to bring you with me the next time we head to Capitol Hill to lobby for more federal funding for autism research. I think your passion and commitment to advocacy are definitely inspiring.
Well, thank you. And I have to tell you that that this really is the reason that I chose to get myself out there and really work hard on behalf of women and children. To really make a difference. So I made a decision to go on The Real Housewives, which was a risky one, as we all know. But I knew in my heart that it would give me opportunities and open doors for me to really do some good in the world, which has really been the biggest blessing in all of this. So it's been wonderful to hear your story. And I'd love to get her on, and I'd love to get Allison on again, Neil.
Oh, absolutely.
Sometimes.
Yeah, we definitely need to have extra time to talk to her, especially with living the everyday life of having a child with autism, how you're able to handle it, certain situations, and also firsthand the passion that you have to take this on, because you serve on a lot of other boards involving autism as well. Your resume is unbelievable, and especially being involved with Autism Speaks before doing this. And to try to get more and more families that I know, at least in the Pittsburgh area, on board to help you out in this cause as well, because I think it's so important.
And I think it's also really important to share the early warning signs of autism with parents. I think it's really critical that parents learn the social milestones the way they know the physical milestones. So, because the sooner a child is diagnosed and the sooner a child starts early intervention services, the better the prognosis for that child. So it's so interesting to me that every new mom knows when a child should roll over, when a child should sit up, when he should walk. We all know the physical milestones, but it's just as important for parents to know the developmental milestones. So, for example, when a child should start using words, when a child should show social interest in other people, with a social smile, with gesturing. So these early warning signs are listed on our website. They're on the CDC website. But the key for families is not to wait. If you suspect that your child is developmentally delayed or not meeting milestones, don't wait. Talk to your doctor so that if there is an issue, you can start your child in an early intervention program as soon as possible. You know, early intervention is still the best weapon that we have against autism, and many kids make great gains when they're enrolled in evidence-based early intervention programs.
Well, absolutely, and I was a DV, developmental therapist, birth to three, and we did have children that had early warning signs that we were able to get the therapy that they needed, not just early intervention. So, Allison, where can we find more information on you and learn more about you?
Well, we have lots of information about autism, the early warning signs, about the research that we're funding on our website, autismsciencefoundation.org.
Fantastic.
And you also have a Twitter, right? You have a Twitter as well? Right.
We have a Twitter account. We have an extremely active Facebook group where we post all of the scientific studies that are being published, the ones that we fund, the ones that other people fund. But that way, we always encourage families to go to the science, to read the studies themselves. You know, our families are really smart. We can read the studies. And then we talk about them on Facebook and on Twitter.
Wonderful. Well, anything that I can do to further your cause and get the word out, I'd love to have you come down to D.C. We can go beat down some doors and lobby some congressmen on the issue.
That sounds great. I will definitely take you up on that. I know you are. And you are a force to be reckoned with. They will, I think, run scared when they hear that you're coming. I will definitely take you up on that.
Well, Allison, thank you so much for spending time with us today and educating us on Autism and Your Cause, Autism Science Foundation. So without further ado, this is Mary Amon, your host of Real Talk with the Real Housewives. Make sure you tune in next week for more Real Talk with more interesting people sharing how they are making a positive impact on our world.
All right. And thanks again for calling, both of you, and we'll be in touch and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Tutor Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You got to go to my website, TotalTutor.net, to find out more information on Total Education Network. We keep getting syndicated. We're syndicating 100-plus stations. You got to go to my website. I also own a Birththrough College Tutoring and Consulting Company. And I want to help welcome my co-host, Jarrett. And I got a big surprise for you tonight, Jarrett.
I am always surprised by what you have in store for us, but I cannot wait to hear what we have for me and my listeners.
Well, I tell you, it's the thing is, Jarrett, sometimes you're always like the backup to interview our celebrities. But when I heard about he was interested in coming on the show, it was an absolute honor. I've had Super Steelers, but they're from the 70s, but not a current Steeler. So I want to welcome the program, Ryan Clark. Ryan, how are you?
Good, guys. How are you doing?
Fantastic. It's an honor that you're on the show, and I'm really excited to learn more and more about your foundation, see how our listeners can help. So why did you decide to do the foundation, Ryan?
You know, it was just going through some of the things that I've been going through and that I had to deal with, which also losing my sister in law and school. Just looking for a way to give back to the community. The people who suffer from this disease and from this illness. I met Dr. Mark Gladway, who is a doctor here in Pittsburgh, who had more passion and more vigor and more fight to find a cure for this disease than anyone I've ever met, even people who suffer daily from this illness. And so it was exciting to team up with him, and UTMC had a strong backing. And we decided to start the Ryan Clark Cure League, which is, you know, what the money goes to that we earn any kind of way, whether it be through donation, whether it be through fundraisers. It's truly the sickle cell awareness and also to the sickle cell research. You know, our goal is to find the cure. And on the way to finding the cure, if we can, you know, help people just get along with the daily struggles that it takes when dealing with this illness, dealing with sickle cell, those are the things that we want to do.
Well, I think that's fantastic, Jarrett. And again, we always find these athletes that are really trying to give back, Jarrett. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. I mean, we've interviewed so many athletes, and we hear a familiar story from them that it's personalized. It's something that they are passionate, and I can even hear that in Ryan's voice. He's passionate as a football player, and I can absolutely hear his passion about his foundation and what they're providing. Ryan, I have a quick question here. In what way has your professional career as a football player helped you or laid the groundwork for this foundation? Who did you reach out to kind of promote this and get it going?
Well, you know, obviously, you know, being on TV, you know, through football, but also playing for an organization like I played for, Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, we've competed in Super Bowls. We've won Super Bowls. A very visible team when it comes to the NFL. It allowed me to put my face out there and kind of be an ambassador for my foundation, but also for sickle cell. We've never really had anyone really stand up and say, hey, I suffer from this illness in some way, or I've dealt with tragedy through sickle cell, and you know, I've come out on the other side. Here's how I've done it, and I also want to help you. So that's been, you know, very beneficial to myself and also the foundation. When you have a team like me, you're able to do events and have the Troy Polamalu's and, you know, and the Ben Roethlisberger's and all these other guys who are on your team help out. They're also everywhere I go, whether it's, you know, do a show on ESPN, there's ESPN personalities who are willing to help me out. Anything I've done, I've got nothing but total support, even having opportunities to come on your show, you know, and talk about my foundation. So it's been really amazing, just the opportunities that have been afforded to me. Also, next week, I'm getting the opportunity to speak to the National Black Caucus of State Legislators, you know, which is something I know I wouldn't get the opportunity to do if I wasn't a football player. And so it's exciting that I've been able to use that for the celebrity that I've been able to gain through playing football that God has blessed me to do to help this disease and to help people who suffer from it.
Well, Absolutely, and I wanted to go right to that, Ryan, and I know why. It's because of the Rooneys. The Rooneys really set the tone for you guys. I interviewed Art Rooney II at the Andy Russell Golf Tournament a couple weeks ago, and he talked about how he really takes what his grandfather taught him, and that the team really looks at giving back, and it really helps, I guess, the entire organization how you guys are all looking for those opportunities, and the Steelers really afford you those opportunities, don't they?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it starts from the top. If you look at our organization, if you look at, you know, our owner, our president, the Rooney family, just through our history, they've always given back. You know, even with the fashion show each year, you know, we donate all that money to charity. We have different walks, which I'll be actually co-chairing one this year. So everything that we do is, you know, we promote giving back to community. When you have young kids come in, whether it be a day, you know, during the week on Tuesdays when we're off, you know, we get into the schools, we get out into the community to try to help. And I think when you have that coming from the top of your organization, it filters through all the way, whether it's the secretary, whether it's the security guards, you know, the guys that work the front desk, everybody in our building is about giving back. It's about sharing, you know, what we've been able to obtain with our community, with the people who support us. And also the Rooneys, they're willing to help in any endeavor that you have. You know, if you have a fundraiser, if you have some type of event that's supporting, you know, your foundation, they're willing to be a part of it, whether it's giving items to auction off or making sure you have people there to support you from the organization. And when you have that type of backing and support, you know, it only allows you to, you know, go further and do more for your cause.
So, in other words, an absolute team effort. We don't do this on our own. We have
really
a whole team to support us.
It really is. You know, you can't do it by yourself. You can't. There's no way you can generate enough passion, no way you can generate enough energy or enthusiasm if it's just one man going at it alone. And one thing about our team, guys always come out and support. If you have an event, if you have something going on, guys are going to do their best to make it. And I think it is. It's like that across the league, but I think it's a really special place here in Pittsburgh. We look at each other like brothers. We're family. I think we behave that way on and off the field.
One question also, Ryan, I wanted to ask you is about fundraising, especially with the economy and everything. How difficult is it to fundraise for charities, and how much have you learned from others on how to be able to do a great fundraiser and raise the right money?
You know, honestly, it's been awesome to be paired with UPMC. Obviously, they have so much backing and so much support, and they've really been wonderful to me. I have a guy who I work closely with who's not just a business partner, but a friend, Steve Tazzilli, who works his butt off constantly, basically running my foundation and finding different ways to fundraise, but also finding ways to give back that aren't about money. Last week, we were able to just bring out some kids who suffer from sickle cell and their families, whether it be their mothers or their fathers, and to give them an opportunity to play basketball with us, you know, kick the soccer ball around, eat pizza, play video games, just to give them a break from the monotony of dealing with this illness and the pain that you have to go through when you have it every day. We have a softball game coming up here on June 11th. But, you know, Steelers will be paired with, you know, media types and local celebrities. That's just another way to raise money, but also get people around in the community so you can spread the word about what you're doing with your fundraiser. We had Cleats for the Cure last year where guys donated actual game-worn cleats, and we got, you know, local artists to paint them or set up sculptures to get people to buy it, and just to get people enthusiastic about what we're doing. And so we've been able to raise money, but you also know you have to incorporate, you know, the community and also teach people as they go along in these things. And so it's been fun just to learn from, you know, Troy doing his fundraiser, when you go to Brett Kiesel, you know, for cystic fibrosis. Everything that I pick up from other people, I try to incorporate it and use it in our fundraiser.
It's simply amazing. And Ryan, I know our listeners will be interested in hearing about this, and obviously you're a very modest person because you keep referring to so many other players and the good work that they're doing, and not necessarily referring to yourself. But you earned an award from the NFL, correct?
Yes, this year I received the Walter Payton Award, you know, for the team. And what it is, it's, you know, it's voted on, honestly, by, you know, Mr. Rooney and, you know, people that work with the team closely in community relations. You know, like about people who are guys on the team who do good work in the community, guys who are giving back, guys who are reaching out. And, you know, it's an honor more than any other award that you can receive. I think it's the biggest thing because it's voted on by people who deal with you every day, people who see you all the time, you know, who have thought enough of you to say that you deserve this. It was huge. It was huge for me. It was also huge for our foundation. It was just another way to get out the good work that the people that work with the Ryan Clark Chili are doing.
I'm amazed, Ryan, how motivated you are to be successful with your foundation, have the right team around you. But again, it takes a team. As you said, Steve is very involved in it, in all these different things. But what is your ultimate goal with the foundation? You said a cure. But where do you see things in the next 5 years for your foundation?
Well, you know, we've been able to raise tons of money. And what the money goes to right now, obviously, is awareness and research. But we're trying to, our end goal is to work toward having the Ryan Clark, you know, Center for Sickle Cell Research, where that's all we do is work on finding a cure. I think right now we would love to find one more FDA approved, maybe two, something where there will be more options for people to find ways to get released from the sickle cell disease. But our end game and our final goal is to find a cure. Find a way for people to not have to deal with this for their whole lives. Find a way to not have to go to the hospitals week in and week out only to get pain pills or to be looked at as you're going to the hospital just to receive drugs. So for us, it is something that, you know, is near and dear to our hearts. It's not just about putting on a good front as if we're trying to make a difference. It's actually making a physical difference. And, you know, we want to find a cure. We would have named it something else. I would have named it Ryan Clark Help League, you know, if I wasn't trying to find a cure and put an end to the sickness.
Just a terrific story that you have shared with us, Ryan. Let's talk a little bit about the disease, the disorder. Our listeners may not know that it takes a gene from each of the parents to...
Yes.
To have a diagnosis of sickle cell. When do most people who have sickle cell disease, when do they find out that they actually have it?
You know, a lot of times it's, you know, once kids begin to get sick, they're trying to implement things out to where, you know, all kids are tested, but it's just not something that they have. That's effective right now that they're doing. I was actually at my daughter's baseball practice talking to one of the moms, and, you know, her son's 18 months. And she just found out that he suffers from sickle thalassemia. So it's, you know, it's as they age and as, you know, they're usually young, but they find out because they're in and out of the hospital. You can't figure out why they're so sick, why they're so fragile. I know even for myself, I didn't find out I had the trait. You know, until I was almost an adult. And then even after that, I wasn't even educated on, you know, how to handle it, how to deal with it, or, you know, what could be the consequences or repercussions of having it. So it's things that, you know, you find out young, but it's not something that they know when you're born. It's not like a lot of other, you know, illnesses that you get from birth, genes, transmitted from the parents. And, you know, so once they find out, you know, it's a life of transfusion, it's a life of pain, a life of medication, you know, and it's tough to do, but it's not, you know, two parents can, you know, both have the gene, and you can have a child who doesn't have sickle cell. You know, it's not 100% that is going to happen, you know, but in the cases that it does, it is really tough for them to deal with.
Okay. And Ryan, I know Neil has so many questions here, but when we get someone on this show with your profile and the terrific work you've done, I tend to ask a lot of questions here. I want to just ask, how do people get involved? If they're listening right now, how are they going to get involved and say, I have to make a difference too?
Yeah, I mean, you go to cureleague.org. All the information is there. You can actually donate right there on site. But even if it's just not about donation, if you want to get awareness, if you want to see what the foundation is doing before you decide to be a part of it, you know, all the information is right there on our website, and that's cureleague.org. And, you know, what we want to do is continue to update you on the things that we're doing, but also get you involved. So if there's anything information-wise you need to know, if there are children with sickle cell whose parents, you know, need to find doctors or need to find ways to, you know, be helpful and help them through that pain, you can find everything there on our website. You can also donate through text. So, you know, we're just trying to find ways to reach out.
Well, fantastic, Ryan. Again, it was an honor to have you on the show. Can our listeners, is there another place to find you? Are you on Twitter and stuff and Facebook? Do you have a fan Facebook page?
Well, you said, do I have a fan Facebook?
Yeah.
I think I do have a fan Facebook page. I know nothing about it. I've never actually been on it, to be honest. The Cheer League has a Twitter account. I don't have Twitter anymore. I decided to just focus on family and trying to figure out a way to beat the disease and, you know, win another Super Bowl.
All right.
See, Neil, I hope you're listening to what Ryan told you. You're always telling me to get on Facebook and Twitter and look at this, an NFL star telling us that he has nothing to do with it either.
Yeah, well, and I was looking for you. I was about to tweet you out, Ryan, and I said, "Where's Ryan?" And I'm like, "He's not on Twitter. What's going on here?" And then I understand that completely. But also, you know, it's very interesting. The last point when you said about a Super Bowl, I asked Art Rooney II. I said, "You know, every time that they count out the Steelers, that they're not going to, you know, do well. That forget them, write them off. They win a Super Bowl." Well, I hope after interviewing Art Rooney II, then yourself, that we find out that we're going to be Super Bowl champs. So good luck on this season, and I hope that you bring back a ring. That's what I'm hoping for.
All right, thank you guys so much for having me on.
All right, take it, Ryan. See you later. Okay, bye. All right, you're listening to Total Tutors Show, powered by Jarrett, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Tutors Show, powered by the Beach Lifestyle Celebrity Segment. And I want to welcome somebody that's been on a little bit of a hiatus, and I'm so excited we'll be having him more in the summer again. My co-host, the main man, Simply G, G.J. Reynolds, SimplyG.com. G.J., how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, and I'm really excited about today's show. And, you know, if I'm going to come back off a hiatus, you might as well start with the best, and today we got one of the best, and I'm pretty excited about that. And, you know, I'd say let's just jump right into it, Neil. So, you know, I'll just start the introduction. Our guest today is an investor, he's a businessman, he's a self-help author. He's written over 15 books. I think there's, and each book has I have every one of his books, including his new book that he's going to talk about. He's a motivational speaker. He's a financial literacy activist, and he's had impact on me, and he doesn't even know it. And most people know him from the series that he's written, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Please welcome to the show, Robert Kiyosaki. How are you doing, Robert?
Well, thank you. That's a great introduction. I appreciate it.
Yeah, he is the man for introductions. I said, GJ, you go ahead and introduce him, and I'll go ahead and start with certain questions. Have we missed anything about you, Robert, for your background, for our audience that might not know who you are, being the New York Times bestselling author and so well-known in certain areas?
You did pretty good, yeah. I grew up in Hawaii, and then that Rich Dad, Poor Dad is a story about my two dads. My real dad was head of education for the state of Hawaii, a really smart guy, PhD and all that. And he was my poor dad, though, because, you know, we don't teach much about money at school. And my rich dad was my best friend's father. And that's where the story comes from. So I grew up in Hawaii having these two fathers, one rich, one poor, and they say very different things about money.
Well, absolutely, and I agree. A lot of times, again, that's what we're going to be talking about today is financial literacy in so many ways, and a lot of people who are educated never know how to utilize money in the correct way. They use money in the wrong way. They're very well educated, but yet when it comes to finances, they don't understand. And, G, you've run into a lot of those people, haven't you, G?
Right.
Well, Ryan. I run into it all the time, and obviously, that's one of the great things that, you know, Robert's done is that he's, you know, taught and written in a very simple way for people to understand and apply it. And most people are never taught how to be successful or taught how to be responsible with their money. So, you know, obviously we got, you know, your new book, Robert, you know, Why A Students Work for C Students. I'm a C student, and I'm proud of it. And the B students work for the government. So, why don't you tell us a little bit about your book, which came out recently, and how it's doing, and a little bit more about it. And one thing before you do that, I I've taught many, many times the cash flow quadrant, and it's been a very good tool for me in my own life, and it's been a great tool for impacting other people without your knowledge. So thanks for sharing it, and thanks for teaching me, and I'm proud to say it works very well.
Well, thank you very much. Again, I don't need to do an interview. You guys can carry on. I can't praise myself that well, because that wouldn't be fine. That wouldn't be kosher. So anyway, thank you.
Yeah. So it's go ahead, G.
So you're welcome. And yeah, it's one thing for us to promote you. It's another thing when you do it yourself. It's bragging. So
yeah.
So. Well, it's all well deserved. So, why don't you tell us a little bit about your current book and the impact of it, and so our audience can learn more about it, and also where they can also go and find it and buy it.
Well, thank you. Why A students work for C students and B students work for the government comes out of my concern for people who are parents with kids who are concerned about their kids' education. But also for young people, maybe still in college. So this is that age bracket. Because as you know, the world is very, very different. The world is changing. So I'm very pro-education, but our school system is not changing. And because it's not changing, it's actually creating and pumping out more and more poor people who come out with this entitlement attitude. You know, the government owes us a living. And that's worldwide, not just the U.S., and that really concerns me, because what's going to bring down America in the next 2 or 3 years is not communism or terrorism. It's going to be entitlement.
I agree.
It's all the old guys my age who say, "Hey, where's my money?"
Exactly. And Neil and I had this. You know, Neil and I have a staff. People, and we're talking about, there's this entitlement, and we're like, okay, where's this entitlement come from? And you get it right on the head that it comes from the early ages of the school and what we see on TV. And so obviously your book addresses that. So why don't you share a little bit more about, the book? Obviously I'm dominating this this interview, Neil, so I apologize, Neil.
No, that's fine. I'm interested in learning from both of you. You guys are all great entrepreneurs, and I'm just sitting and listening. So go ahead. Tell us about the book. One thing I wanted to say, Robert, is financial literacy is so important, and it's important to teach children about money and something that our schools are missing, and that's one reason you wrote the book, right, Robert?
Well, if you look at the real world, because school is not real world, and that's my poor dad, the PhD, And my rich dad always said to me, he says, you go to the bank, and the banker doesn't ask you for your report card. Your banker asks you for your financial statement. Bankers don't care if you went to Harvard or flopped school. They don't really care. They want to see your financials, because your financials show your financial intelligence, your financial IQ. And 99.99% of kids coming out of high school have no idea what a financial statement is. And, I talked to school teachers. I said, we're teaching them to balance checkbooks. I said, oh, my God, are you guys still in the primitive? You're still dragging knuckles somewhere? I'm just going, where are you guys? And the problem is a school teacher has no idea what a financial statement is. And that's where it kind of begins. So if you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad and Cash Flow Quadrant and you played my cash flow game, it's all about the financial statement, because that's your report card when you grow up. And as you know, we're in severe financial trouble today, not because, it's because our leaders are screwed up also. I mean, you look at, I'm not Republican or Democrat, but our budgets are shot. I know the stock market is up. It's only because Bernanke is printing trillions of dollars. So we're going to crash again in about 2 years, and then it's going to be hell to pay once again. And your kids are the ones that are going to pay for it. As you know, the rich get richer. That's why I'm saying there's no financial crisis. But the poor middle class get wiped out. So I wrote why A students work for B students, C students, and B students work for the government. It's because we have a bunch of idiots running the government. And if you're an idiot like them, then you're going to get wiped out with them. Plain and simple. That's all I'm saying. So I'd rather take care of myself than hope that Mr. Obama or if it was Romney. I didn't really care who they were. I don't want them to take care of me. I'll take care of myself. Thank you.
All right, GJ, your response to that.
Well, I agree wholeheartedly, and I teach that you have to be responsible, especially in today's economic times, and we're in a, I call it the false market.
Very false.
And at some point, you know, you can only pump in so much falsicity, and as a business owner, as you know, if we ran our business the way the government's running the government, we would be bankrupt and we'd be, you know, having to start over, and unfortunately, I see that happening. So everything you're saying, I agree wholeheartedly, and unfortunately, it's a sad truth. So, you know, obviously, education and teaching people how to, maneuver in these choppy waters and go, and it isn't happening in the schools. So we definitely have to do it outside the schools. And unfortunately, you know, how many people actually go and search out that information? You know, all the great information you've written about over the years. You know, that's why I was really excited about this interview because, you know, it's a great platform to teaching people. And that's really what we're all about is teaching education of how to empower yourself and be responsible for yourself. And when you're empowering yourself, you're able to empower others. And,
right. The schools are not going to teach your kids. I wrote why ACLs were for C students is are for parents who actually are proactive in their kids' financial education, which most parents aren't. And I wrote it for kids in college, you know, because they're coming out to a tougher world than I ever did. I'm a baby boomer. So the kids coming out of school today, you know, they're going to get a high-paying job. I said, you got to be kidding me. You know what I mean? So that's why I wrote the book, is if you're really concerned about education, then Why A Students Work for C Students is a very important book, because it's about education.
So where can we go and find information about your book? Obviously, your personal website as well.
Right. Well, the book's at, you know, obviously Amazon.com, but most bookstores and all that. And like I said, I'm very, very concerned because I think we're going down in a couple of years. And if we're not prepared for it, what the good news is you have a couple of years. You can do things. And Mr. Bernanke right now, as you know, is just printing trillions of $85 billion a month or something. The Japanese just started it. And next, the Europeans are going to start printing money in mass. And if you sit there and hope Mr. Obama's going to save you, you know, he's not. I mean, I'm not Republican or Democrat, but he can't. It's impossible. You know, this has gone, what we are doing today has been repeated through history from the time of the Romans. And that's why I say we don't learn anything about money at school. This baby is going down because the dollar is going down. And that's what people have to be aware of.
Well, absolutely, Robert. And I think, how can we teach our kids this early to make sure they understand this? You know, it's credit cards. Let's keep running up bills, and the government will bail us out. So how are there ways that in this book it could teach others – teach parents how to teach their kids this, and also administrators and teachers to teach their kids.
Don't waste your time, man. Our school system is corrupt. That's all I want. The teachers aren't like my poor dad. They're not bad people, but they really don't know anything about money. They've been asking me about childbirth. I don't know anything about that, you know. So all I'm saying here is this. I wrote Why A Students Work for C Students very simply. My rich dad started teaching me about money when I was 9 years old playing Monopoly. You know, we all know the formula, 4 greenhouses, 1 red hotel. And today, that's all I do is I play Monopoly in real life. You don't have to play Monopoly. There's millions of ways you can get rich. You know, that kid who just sold his business to Yahoo or something for $1 billion. He's a high school dropout. You know, his lack of education is killing him. So there's more opportunity than ever before, except that all I'm saying is that without financial education in schools, your kids are going to come out looking for a job, trying to save money when the government's printing millions of dollars, billions and trillions of dollars. And then you're going to try and get out of debt when the rich are using debt. See, debt is the most powerful leverage it is, except people don't know how to use it. So everything they teach you in school is the stuff my poor dad taught me. And I would be a poor man if I followed his advice, which was get a job, work hard, save money, get out of debt, buy a house, and put my money in mutual funds. I'd be broke today. You know, that's really bad advice. There's better advice is all I'm saying. And I'm very concerned. You know, I think we're more than a financial crisis. We're an education crisis.
Well, and I agree with the education crisis. You could come on my show, Robert, to talk about that definitely another time. GJ, response again, because it seems like I'm interviewing two entrepreneurs that see the direction our financial country's going. People, young people today, and not understanding money. Gee, it's a very, very difficult problem, isn't it?
Well, it is, and it's out of control, as Robert has, you know, articulated. And now it's like, the inevitable is the inevitable. So the key is, what do we do in the meantime? And as Robert said, there's plenty of ways to be smart and create wealth and create, if we do it the way we're being taught in schools and through our government, then that's really the wrong path. So you really got to go the entrepreneur way and think like an entrepreneur. And unfortunately, most people are never taught how to think like an entrepreneur, as we know. I've always thought a little different, and I know entrepreneurs think a little different and think outside the box. And, you know, instead of worrying about the grade, let's worry about the result. And that's really what I hear, you know, the C students do. So it goes back to, what do we do? You know, what would be three steps that you'd recommend, Robert, to our listening audience that they could do right now to move forward?
Well, step one, obviously, I'd buy my book. And step two, at the end of every chapter, there are action steps a parent can do or a young person can do to improve their financial IQ. And number three is, you got to think differently. I mean, if you're following the instructions of go to school, get a job, work hard, save money, get out of debt, invest for the long term in a 401k, you're going to get hammered. They're going to get freaking hammered. And that's all I'm saying. It's going to be around 2016 or 2017. So you have time to take action right now. All I'm saying is this, is that, you know, that what the guy Yogi Berra, the famous New York Yankee, said, it's deja vu all over again. Sports fans, it is deja vu all over again. They're doing exactly the same thing that caused the economy to crash in 2002, 2007, and now it's going to be 2016. And so you can make money when markets crash. In fact, you make more money when markets crash. But if you're kind of buying, holding, and praying like they tell you to do, you'll probably get wiped out. So that's when I start teaching my kids early to start not being a sheep going, meh, you know, because you know what happens to sheep. Anyway, that's my advice.
Okay, Robert, again, information by where we can purchase the book and learn more about you.
Well, it's Amazon.com. There's a lot of them. Every bookstore has it. I guess why A students work for C students. And it's by Robert Kiyosaki. You know, it's a Rich Dad series of books. And it's about time. If you don't start teaching your kids to be rich, they're going to join the middle class. And, you know, both Obama and Romney said they're going to save the middle class. And when politicians promise to save you, you know you better stand up, bend over, and kiss it goodbye. And the good news is, it's when markets crash, that's when you really get rich. And that's so counterintuitive to what people say. And the last thing I'll say is, your banker has never asked you for your report card. Your banker wants to see your financial statement. And most people leave school, A students included, they don't know what a financial statement is. They're out there looking for a job, working for some rich guy. That's nuts.
Understand completely, Robert. And last question, and GJ will ask this question because this is what we do, anyone that comes on the show. GJ, give him the magic question and hear what he has to say.
The magic question we always ask is, you know, what is your 90-day challenge goal? So with everything that's going on in your life, what's your focus for the next 90 days?
Well, I'm going to go to Africa and have a good time. That's it, man. Look, if you have more money coming in than money is going out, whether you work or not, then you can get on with life. It's called freedom. And, you know, Lincoln set slaves free, and now I'm trying to set the employees free.
Well, I like this, Robert. All right.
I'm going to have a good time for the next 90 days.
Well, you might be seeing my in-laws. They're going to Africa in July, so you might run into
them. I'll be in Johannesburg.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling, Robert, and we'll stay in touch, okay?
Right. Thanks for the time, you guys. Good
luck. All right, take care. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. Thank you, Robert.
Bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Tutor Show, powered by the Beach Lifestyle Celebrity Segment. We'll be back in just a moment.